From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. It has been more than a week since a 19-year-old gunman massacred 17 people at a high school in Parkland, Florida, with an assault rifle. While most of us expected this would be a school shooting like others, where politicians offer their thoughts and prayers, and then turn back to using the campaign cash and talking points of the NRA, this time round, the reaction has been different. Survivors of the Parkland shooting have refused to remain silent, and students and parents have launched organizations, led walkouts, confronted lawmakers at town hall meetings, and challenged President Trump and the Republican Party on their allegiance to the NRA over the lives of ordinary people. Donald Trump held a listening session with students and parents earlier in the week, and his solution to solving the problem of gun violence on campuses is to arm teachers, for which he is being widely denounced. The Parkland survivors have said never again. Will their plea be heard? We turn now to two organizers with the March for Our Lives Los Angeles, Chrissy Watson and Philip Germain. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank
you so much for joining us. Let me first start by asking the two of you why you are organizing, being part of this nationwide effort. There's going to be a march in Washington, D.C. on March 24th. The two of you are organizing the counterpart in Los Angeles, and there are many others around the country. What has motivated you to join in this first, Chrissy?
Honestly, it's just, it's been coming to a head for years now, and this shooting for me just feels like it's the last straw. And I think it's really important that we stand by these kids. They are rising up. There's no reason why the rest of us shouldn't rise up and walk with them.
Philip, what about you?
Well, I think that for a long time now, we've seen school shooting after school shooting, if it's, you know, Sandy Hook, or if it's San Bernardino or wherever, these kids are dying. And people are turning a blind eye to it and giving them thoughts and prayers while continuing to fund and vote on issues which allow them to continue happening. And I think that this shooting in Parkland has sadly been the exclamation point on what has been a fed up generation that's tired of dying because politicians refuse to take action. So they're standing back and saying, you know what, we're going to take it from here.
And I understand, Philip, that you're a political science student at the College of the Canyons in Santa Clarita. So you are a college student. A lot of these burgeoning movements now that are popping up all over the country being led by students like yourself, but also a lot of high school students. How do you feel about seeing these kids, many of them even younger than you, who are leading this effort seemingly entirely on their own?
It's absolutely amazing, and it's great to see. I said this before. The first day of school this semester was highlighted by a 25-minute active campus shooter training. That was during a 7 a.m. accounting class. If it wasn't bad enough taking accounting at 7 a.m., I was highlighted by taking an active school shooter training where they showed students running across the room to draw fire as others are supposed to tackle them. And I think if that's where we're at as a society, then you know what, maybe it is time to give these students the ability to lead because apparently the adults can't do it.
Mm-hmm. Chrissy, let's talk about what our president has been saying. He held a listening session earlier this week at the White House, where some survivors of the Parkland massacre and parents of victims showed up. And actually, there has been some news reports about the cheat sheet that he apparently held in his hands that reminded him to say, I hear you, reminded him to, you know, come up with ways to empathize with these students. It was interesting that this handwritten note has made the news as well. But he has said that he wants to arm teachers. That's his solution. What do you make of that?
I think that is a completely ridiculous solution. I don't think that's the role of a teacher at all. They're educating kids, they're shaping kids, they're working with these kids and helping them become who they're going to be. the last thing they need to worry about is having to control a weapon. I mean, that is not what they go to school for. That's not what they signed up for. That is not their role. I think that's not a solution. And I don't think he's not trying to listen. Otherwise, he wouldn't need a cheat sheet. And I think it's absolutely ridiculous.
Okay, so to be fair, this is what the president tweeted on the morning of Thursday, February 22nd. He said, "I never said, quote, give teachers guns, like was stated on fake news, CNN and NBC. What I said was to look at the possibility of giving, quote, concealed guns to gun-adept teachers with military or special training experience, only the best 20% of teachers, a lot would now be able to, et cetera." And then he continued that in another tweet. So Philip, he's saying, "I never said give teachers guns," but he's kind of saying, "I said give teachers guns."
Right, right. let's just play that out. What are we allowing that? That's going to be a gunfight now? Is that what the result of a shooting is going to be? I mean, that's not an answer.
And you said 20%, right? So what's the 20% of the best of the best are supposed to get guns, which means you might have one or two armed teachers on campus. How is that going to exactly help, especially if some of these campuses already have police officers that patrol the grounds? Mm-hmm. For example, we were at a high school yesterday where they were holding one of the walkouts, and there was a sheriff outside. There was a gate that went around the high school with two, not deputies, but school watchers who were at the gates making sure that you were allowed to get on campus. So I don't think the answer to gun violence is making schools into prisons and making them lock down secure zones, because that truly highlights where we're at. If we're really throwing it to the teachers at this point of, hey, get some gun training, or if you have gun training, fantastic, put it on your resume if you want to teach English. You know, that's kind of the problem.
I mean, so this is what Trump went on to say in further tweets. He said, if a potential sicko shooter knows that a school has a large number of very, very weapons-talented teachers and others who will be instantly shooting, the sicko will never attack that school. Cowards won't go there. Problem solved. Must be offensive. Defense alone won't work. He said, history shows that a school shooting lasts on average 3 minutes. It takes police and first responders approximately 5 to 8 minutes to get to the site of crime. Highly trained gun-adept teachers / coaches would solve the problem instantly before police arrive. Great deterrent. Immediately fire back if a savage sicko came to the school with bad intentions. Highly trained teachers would also serve as a deterrent to the cowards that do this. Far more assets at much less cost than guards. A gun-free school is a magnet for bad people. Attacks would end. The Donald Trump seems to think that the solution is really simple. He's so confident that this would solve the problem of gun violence on schools. There's two questions I want to ask the two of you here. Is what about gun violence outside schools? And there have been people pointing out that even the NYPD, which is a very well-trained police department, has a target shooting, a successful target rate of something like 20%. Only 20% of the time when they shoot their guns, they actually hit their targets. So Philip and Chrissy, again, this just seems like the president is trying to pull a fast one on the country.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear his belief in how easy it is to solve. You know, they don't say it's a gun issue yet. Multiple developed nations have gun-free schools and are gun-free. We have the biggest problem where it's a common occurrence happening on average once a week. So that highlights that maybe it just is a gun problem. And yes, there's a factor which, of course, highlights mental health, but you can't address one and not the other. That's just not smart. And if we're talking about gun violence outside of schools, it's an epidemic. You look at cities where there is gun violence on an hourly basis, where it's horrible, where you have kids that are running for their lives, and you have families that are just facing horror on a daily basis. And that's not right. And if we're going to make this an issue of, oh, criminals are going to find a way to get guns, then why do we have laws at all?
Right, exactly. go ahead, Chrissy.
Right, and also to argue his point of a shooter knowing there's a gun inside wouldn't enter. We're not dealing with a reasonable person. You're dealing with someone who's broken to the point where they want to murder children. That person isn't going to think, oh, there's a gun inside, so I think I'll turn around. They're going to think my gun is bigger because I have an automatic weapon. They probably don't.
So Trump, let's talk about the NRA. Trump, even, you know, as he is saying he's listening to school kids, went on Twitter and reiterated his support for the NRA. This is what he tweeted. What many people don't understand or don't want to understand is that Wayne, Chris, and the folks, he's on a first name basis with the NRA heads, of course, Wayne, Chris, and the folks who work so hard at the NRA are great people and great American patriots. They love our country and will do the right thing, make America great again. Wayne LaPierre, of course, being the head of the NRA, and actually, Chrissy and Philip, I want to play for you and our audience a clip of what Wayne LaPierre said at the Conservative Political Action Committee CPAC conference just this week. His response, his take on the Parkland shooting and the political organizing and demands happening after it.
It's not a safety issue. It's a political issue. They care more about control and more of it. Their goal is to eliminate the Second Amendment. Their solution is to make you, all of you, less free. They want to sweep right under the carpet the failure of school security, the failure of family, the failure of America's mental health system, and even the unbelievable failure of the FBI. Do we really love our money and our celebrities more than we love our children? Can we answer that question honestly? Any of us, can we answer that question honestly, knowing that we surround and protect so much with armed security?
And that is Wayne LaPierre, head of the NRA, at a conference just this week, you know, just a week after the Parkland massacre, saying their solution, meaning the solution of gun control advocates, is to make you, all of you, less free. They want to sweep under the carpet the failure of school security and the failure of family. And then Chrissy and Philip, he shockingly said, do we really love our money and our celebrities more than we love our children? When I heard that line, I thought I had stepped into the Twilight Zone. Philip, what do you make of that?
Well, Wayne and the NRA, I'm sure, do love their money more than family, considering they donate billions of dollars every election cycle to candidates who fully support support gun legislation that expands reach and rolls back any gun regulation. They gave Trump tens of millions of dollars. They give congressional candidates tens of thousands of dollars, depending on what district they're in and their leadership in the House or the Senate. So they're fully tied to their money, and that's also the reason why they do these things, because when they make Americans feel less safe, gun sales go up. And the NRA, just how sad that is to say, the failure of families. I wonder how the moms and dads felt that dropped their kids off at Douglas High School and did not pick them up that day. Is that really the failure of a family? Hardworking parents that are making, or that should hope that their kids are safe at school? Or these millionaires and billionaires who run gun corporations that feel no empathy and that can go on a week after a shooting and say how it's their fault?
And Wayne LaPierre, by the way, went on to say that gun control is part of the Democrats and their socialist agenda. So apparently now, if you want to protect people from being victims of gun violence, you are a socialist. Chrissy, any thoughts on that?
Then I'm a socialist. I mean, you know, it goes back to what Philip was saying of it's not, how dare they even assume that it's the family's fault. That it's absurd. And the fact that they think just because we're trying to protect our families and our children who are going to school, a place where their biggest fear should be not getting their homework done, and they're practicing these shooting drills, which in itself is traumatic enough, and they don't see an issue with that, that proves that they are valuing their guns over their families and their children.
Now, Donald Trump has promised the NRA he will come through for them. In fact, at the NRA convention just less than a year ago, last April, he attended their convention. And I want to just quote what he said. He, by the way, of course, was someone whose campaign received $30 million from the NRA, as Emma Gonzalez, one of the Parkland survivors, pointed out in her very powerful speech. So he got $30 million for his campaign from the NRA. This is what he said to them at their NRA convention last year. He said, "Only one candidate in the general election came to speak to you, and that candidate is now the President of the United States standing before you." And he said, "You came through for me, and I am going to come through for you." What does that tell you, Philip?
Well, it kind of shows you where his heart's at. If you give $30 million to a presidential candidate, that tells you about what they think lives are worth. And when it comes to Trump, and you know, when he went the other day to go speak to the students, and having that noted, it further highlights that he truly doesn't care. If it helps him in the polls, it helps him in the polls. If it doesn't, he's not going to look at it. And I think an issue further highlights things he said during the campaign, like when he said the Second Amendment people will take care of Hillary Clinton, and he's advocate for silencers and concealed carry licenses in schools. And when you have shootings like that and you're still not addressing the main concern, and you're instead attacking people on Twitter and trying to be empathetic to students, when you really have to try to be empathetic to students who just watch their friends die.
Right. And in fact, there have been some on the right who have literally accused the student survivors of the massacre of being so-called crisis actors. The conservative commentator Dinesh D'Souza made fun of kids who were crying after the Florida legislature voted to keep in place an assault weapons ban. There was an aide to a state senator in Florida who accused them, who said these are paid crisis actors. And there have been this sort of burgeoning movement of people on social media and the dark corners of the internet that are creating conspiracy theories after mass shootings. It happened after the Sandy Hook shooting, and there's a conspiracy theory about the Parkland shooting as well, that is if it was all a staged act to try to take away people's right to their guns. That is unbelievable to me, and I'm wondering if the two of you have any thoughts on that, because it's just really shocking.
Yeah, I mean, it's the fact, like, I don't even know how to speak towards the lack of empathy that a human could have after seeing a grieving father, mothers, kids who literally saw their best friends die next to them. How does your mind go from seeing that and then trying to justify it on the other side, thinking that it's not real, accusing them of being actors? I feel like that's just pure evil. I don't see how your mind would compute that.
I remember when the Alex Joneses of the world were not towards the mainstream of the Republican Party thought. And that was not too long ago. And you're seeing these conspiracy theorists pop up. I saw the Dinesh D'Souza exchange and watched him get torn apart the other day. And in addition to that, you see these people that are trying to say, yeah, oh, they're actors, they're paid to do this. And you know, I had a message from a family member of mine that lives in Florida, and a coworker's friend of hers lost her daughter at Douglas High. So the fact that they would think that, one, this is fake, and two, this is somehow paid for, is disgusting. And I think the fact that they're afraid of gun control while the entire government is controlled by the Republican Party is interesting. Because if the NRA has their say and they keep donating to these candidates, there will not be gun control as long as the Republicans hold the majority.
Now, what's really interesting is that a lot of students, a lot of activists are facing legislators, facing lawmakers. I mentioned the Florida House that voted to not overturn the assault weapons ban in that state. At that same, and they did that in view of these students who were survivors. And incidentally, at that same legislative session, they voted on looking at pornography as a public health risk, but somehow not gun violence. However, people like Marco Rubio, senator from Florida, who has taken a lot of money from the NRA, has got an A-plus rating from the NRA. He had to face off students at a CNN town hall, and he was asked point blank by students. And in fact, he went on record and said that that he would support raising the age to buy rifles. Trump has said that he's going to be pushing for comprehensive background checks and ending the sale of bump stocks and raising the age to 21. Do you think that even though some of the progress seems to be chipping away at the edges of gun availability, that the fact that these folks, that activists like yourself, are confronting legislators is having an impact already?
I think so. You know, there's been a movement. When I was 14, I was in Kentucky and I went to a gun show. And that day I could have walked out with a Model 1911 or a Colt 45. There was a vendor there that offered it and he said, hey, it's yours for this amount and you can walk out with it today. Mm-hmm. I was very noticeably 14. I know I can sometimes look older than I am, but I was a 14-year-old kid. You can kind of tell. So if we want to do comprehensive background checks, that's a great start. But in addition, you need to take out the gun show loophole. You need to work on concealed carry weapons permits. You need to, I don't even know why the silencers is even a debate. Mm-hmm. Police officers have argued against silencers. They've argued against concealed carry and said, this does not help us.
What about the AR-15? What about assault rifles, which is based on a military-style weapon? And it, after Sandy Hook, it's been the weapon of choice for a lot of mass shooters. After Sandy Hook, one of the parents came out and said that had this shooter needed a little bit more time, the Sandy Hook shooter needed a little bit more time to reload his gun, meaning if it was something other than an assault rifle, there literally would have been more lives, more people that could have escaped his shooting. Why are we not talking about an assault weapons ban, which a new poll has shown a majority of Americans support?
There should be an assault weapons ban, and in addition, high-capacity magazine bans, because that's what ensures that a lot of these shootings can happen. Shooters have less... there's less of a need to reload immediately, and they can knock out 50 rounds, 100 rounds, 200 rounds. They got drum magazines, or they can just keep firing until they run out, and then they have another drum, and you're talking a few hundred more rounds. But they're just firing, and you're right. These shootings are about 3 minutes. So how the hell do they think that some teacher in the gymnasium is going to run across campus in 3 minutes, bring their gun out, whatever they have, and confront a shooter if it's a 3 to 4 minute event, when on average it usually takes about 5 to 10 to get across campus.
And also be able to properly target, not hit an innocent bystander. I mean, this whole myth of a good guy with a gun is a myth. Chrissy, I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this as well. And just also to remind ourselves that we used to have, there used to be a temporary assault weapons ban that the NRA essentially lobbied successfully to let expire, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the whole issue of raising the age, I good for them for opening their mind a tiny bit, but that doesn't really do much. I mean, the Las Vegas shooter was 50 or 60-year-old man. I mean, right. We're not dealing with just an age issue, or it's not one singular thing. It's the fact that these weapons are available to anyone who wants to get them. Mental health in good standing or not, like, it's available to anyone who wants to get them. There, someone bought an AR the other day, I forget, it was a Facebook video that was shared, with an expired ID or with no ID, or a kid can buy them. It's just, it's absolutely ridiculous. And these laws they're not working. People aren't abiding by them. We have to change them. It has to change.
Right. I mean, and it's not just campuses where the shootings happen. There are more than there have been millions of Americans that have been victims of gun violence. There's so many angles to this, so many aspects to this. Domestic violence is an issue. It's a very, very complex issue. But of course, those who control the debate want to keep narrowing it. Let's talk about what has come out of, what else has come out of the Parkland shooting. In addition to students and survivors and activists and parents confronting lawmakers, students are engaged in walkouts on campuses around the country. You guys mentioned that you were at one yesterday, but tell us a little bit about these walkouts. We're not hearing that much, but I understand that they are happening, not just in the Parkland area in Florida, but on campuses around the country?
Yeah, there was one yesterday I was at out in Canyon Country, which is in Santa Clarita. And it happened around the district. It's happening around school districts across the country where they're holding them around lunch period so they don't get in trouble and holding it in the main quads on campus. And the one I was at yesterday had about 70 students. And they were chanting that there needs to be an end to gun violence, that they need to be heard. There's more planned for March 14th that I'm even working on with some students in my community and at the colleges. There's another one planned, I believe, for April 20th, which is the anniversary of Columbine. So students are showing that, you know, if you're not, again, if you're not going to do anything, then we will.
Yeah, you're either for us or against us.
If you have an A+ from the NRA, you should have an F from students.
That's incredible. I mean, this is just, and there's been some reports suggesting that some students in some districts may face punishment for walking out. I mean, the school administrators, the entire school staff should be joining these kids and marching on Washington. It's not just the safety of the students at stake. It's the safety of the entire school community, right? Chrissy, tell us, let's turn to in the final minutes of our conversation about the March for Our Lives. March 24th, you mentioned, I mean, there's several marches happening in April, in different parts of March, but March 24th is the one that has specifically come out of the Parkland massacre and the one that students in Florida have organized in Washington, D.C. You two are organizing the one in Los Angeles. Tell us about what's happening, how people can get involved with that march.
Well, the best thing to do is go to our Facebook page, March for Our Lives LA, or Los Angeles. There's a few different events out, but we are partnering with the people from Florida. We're partnering with DC. We've already partnered with Women's March, Every Town, Mothers Take Action. We're working with LAUSD, and we're also working with LAPD. So our page is really the official page to get the exact location, the exact time. We do also have a volunteer form that people can fill out that we've shared on our Facebook page, and that will help us kind of categorize people as to if they want to help with social media or they want to help with marketing, fundraising, or just on the day of. Right now, we actually have some high school students that are managing our Instagram and our Twitter. So we are all about putting the students at the forefront and making sure they are the ones leading this charge, and just making sure we're doing everything we can to support them.
I understand the national page is marchforourlives.com. For those listening outside of the Southern California area, they can find out what marches there in their own community or maybe consider traveling to D.C.
Absolutely.
We'll post links to both the national page and the Los Angeles area Facebook page on our website later today. Chrissy, Philip, thank you so much for joining us, and good luck to both of you.
Thank you so much
for having us.
My guests have been Chrissy Watson and Philip Germain. They're both organizers of the Los Angeles area March for Our Lives. We've been discussing how people have been organizing in the wake of the Parkland massacre. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.